So, picture this. You step into a traditional souk in Saudi Arabia, and the shop windows are like quite literally overflowing with heavy, physical, intricately designed gold.
Oh, yeah, it's an incredible sight.
Right. It's this ancient, undeniable display of wealth. But, the big question is, how does that visceral, centuries-old tradition actually fit into a highly optimized algorithmic investment portfolio in 2025?
Well, that is exactly what we're looking at today.
Yeah, today we are tearing into a really comprehensive research dossier on investing in goals within the kingdom. We're specifically exploring how to pair that deep cultural heritage with, a highly modern, resilient financial strategy. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
We aren't just looking at where to buy shiny objects, or we are decoding the actual mechanics of goals as a financial tool today.
Yeah, that is the exact mission for this deep dive. I mean, we need to dissect how this ancient metal operates under the hood of a modern portfolio. We have to evaluate the precise local mechanisms available for acquiring it in the kingdom right now and really understand why, mathematically speaking, remains such a critical defensive asset, especially against the macroeconomic headwinds we're facing in 2025.
Totally. And to really grasp its financial power today, I feel like you first have to respect its cultural gravity,
Oh, absolutely. You can't separate the two.
Exactly. Like the data we were looking at makes it abundantly clear. In Saudi Arabia, gold is not just an entry on a balance sheet. It is woven into the social fabric.
It really is.
We are talking about elaborate wedding jewelry, dowries that historically secured a new family's economic foundation,
Yeah.
and like sizzle coins passed down through generations at major family milestones.
Yeah, the generational aspect is huge.
It's almost like a family heirloom that doubles as an emergency savings bond.
I love that analogy. And you know, what's fascinating here is how that deep historical embeddedness fundamentally alters the behavioral economics of the asset itself.
Wait, how so?
Well, when you have a commodity that is so deeply trusted on a cultural level, it creates an incredibly high, stable floor for demand.
Right. Because people just inherently want it.
Exactly. I mean, in Western markets, gold demand can sometimes be purely speculative. But in the kingdom, it is intrinsically tied to human life cycles, marriages, births, generational wealth
Sorry,
transfers.
it's not just day trading.
Exactly. Because people trust it on a visceral level, they don't panic sell their family gold during a slight market dip. That emotional connection literally underpins its reliability as a store of value.
But okay, there is a massive caveat here if you are approaching this purely from a wealth accumulation
Oh,
standpoint.
for sure. The retail side of things.
Right. If you walk into a high-end retail jeweler in Riyadh and buy a, meticulously crafted necklace, you are not just buying the raw material. You are paying a steep premium for the artisanship, the design labor, the brand, and like the retail overhead.
Precisely. I mean, you are basically buying a piece of art that just happens to be made of gold.
Right. And from an investment perspective, that artisanship premium is essentially dead weight.
Yeah, it doesn't compound.
Exactly. If you ever need to liquidate that necklace quickly in a financial pinch, the buyer, especially if they intend to melt it down, is only going to pay you for the spot price of the raw metal by weight.
Right, they don't care about the design.
You instantly lose the margin you paid for that beautiful design.
Yeah.
So, if your goal is strict financial optimization, traditional jewelry is a highly inefficient vehicle.
It is entirely inefficient. And while that cultural tradition of holding physical wealth is a fantastic foundation, a cultural affinity alone cannot mathematically protect a retirement account from the kinds of global economic shocks we are seeing right now in 2025.
Right, so let's look at that macro picture because the data paints a pretty turbulent global landscape right now, right?
Very turbulent.
We have sticky global inflation that just refuses to cool off entirely. Central banks are like playing tug of war with interest rates. We've got highly unpredictable equity markets and massive ongoing geopolitical tensions that are disrupting supply chains.
It's a lot for any portfolio to handle.
It is, and all of this is forcing institutional and retail investors alike to hunt for defensive hedges.
And, well, gold is the ultimate historically proven defensive hedge.
Right.
Its mechanism is straightforward, really. It is a finite physical asset that cannot be printed by a central
No
bank.
matter how much they might want to.
Exactly. Therefore, when fiat currencies lose purchasing power due to inflation, it just takes more of those fiat currencies to buy the same ounce of gold. It naturally absorbs the inflationary shock.
Okay, wait, I have to stop you there.
Sure, what's up?
Because this is where the math seems to kind of contradict itself for a local investor.
Okay, how do you mean?
Well, if you look at the Saudi economy, its domestic liquidity, its real estate sector, and its major equities are already heavily driven by the global energy market.
Yes, very closely tied to oil.
Right. So if an investor in the kingdom is already floating on global oil prices, why are we adding another global commodity to the mix? Aren't we just, like, doubling down on volatility by buying gold?
That is such a great question, and it's a crucial distinction to make. It really comes down to the mechanics of non-correlated assets.
Okay.
Yes, oil is a commodity and gold is a commodity, but they behave entirely differently. In fact, they often behave inversely.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So oil is highly sensitive to economic expansion. Its price surges when factories are running, planes are flying, and the global economy is booming.
Right. It requires consumption to actually have value.
Exactly. But oil is also highly vulnerable to demand destruction during a recession.
Makes sense.
Gold, on the other hand, well, it thrives on fear and stagnation.
Right. The safe haven.
Yes. When the global economy contracts, oil demand plummets, which eventually tightens local liquidity in an energy-driven economy. But in that exact same scenario of global contraction, capital flees from risk-on assets like equities and pours into gold.
Okay, wow. So they balance each other out.
Exactly. By holding gold, a Saudi investor is holding an asset that operates completely outside the local petrochemical liquidity cycle. It is the counterweight. When the offensive side of the portfolio drops, the defensive side holds or rises.
Okay, yeah, that diversification mechanism makes total sense now. You are insulating the portfolio from a single point of failure.
Precisely.
But, I mean, identifying the right asset is only step one. The practical reality of how you actually physically integrate gold into a 2025 portfolio in Saudi Arabia is where the friction usually lies.
Oh, the friction is real.
Right, because burying a chest of bullion in your backyard is not a sound financial strategy.
No, it is a terrible strategy. The logistics of acquisition and custody are where investors either optimize their yields or slowly bleed capital through hidden costs.
Yeah, death by a thousand cuts.
Exactly. So we have to separate this into physical ownership versus institutional paper and digital ownership.
Okay, let's start with the physical route. If you want maximum purity and maximum resale liquidity without pulling for that artisanship we talked about, you are looking at 24-karat bullion bars and coins from authorized dealers.
Yes, strictly 24-karat.
But diving into the research, there is this razor-thin regulatory margin regarding taxes that you have to navigate perfectly.
Ah, you're referring to the VAT exemptions.
Yes. Okay, so normally buying gold in the kingdom means a 15% value-added tax.
Right.
However, investment-grade gold can be exempt. But the guidelines we reviewed show this, like, really dangerous discrepancy.
It's very tricky.
One section of the current regulatory framework notes that VAT exemption applies to gold at 99.9% purity. But a supplementary breakdown suggests exemptions for 99.5% purity.
And that half a percent variance, I mean, it's a massive trap for an unwary investor.
Half a percent impurity dictates whether you pay a 15% tax or zero tax.
If
you buy a bar at 99.5%, assuming it's exempt, and the prevailing local authority enforcement requires 99.9% that day, you have instantly lost 15% of your investment capital before you even walk out of the dealership.
Yeah, and it would take years of market appreciation just to break even from that.
Right. You cannot assume anything. You have to verify the exact purity threshold for tax exemption with the dealer and the Saudi Zakat Tax and Customs Authority on the exact day of your transaction.
Absolutely. And, you know, even if you execute the purchase flawlessly and avoid the VAT, physical custody introduces a permanent ongoing drag on your portfolio.
The storage fees.
Yeah, the cost of security and insurance. A physical bar sitting in a home safe requires high premium insurance. If you rent a safety deposit box, you are paying annual fees.
Right, and those carrying costs slowly eat away at the inflation protection you bought the gold for in the first place.
Which naturally pushes investors toward the banking sector's solutions. Several major Saudi banks now offer dedicated gold accounts.
Oh, that's convenient.
It is. You purchase the metal through the bank, and they securely vault it in your name. They absorb the institutional level security and insurance costs, though obviously they pass a margin of that on to you in fees.
Sure, they aren't doing it for free.
Exactly. But the critical thing to verify with bank accounts is whether the gold is allocated or unallocated.
Wait, what's the difference?
If it is allocated, there are specific bars in that vault with serial numbers assigned directly to you. You are the legal owner.
Okay.
If it is unallocated, you are essentially an unsecured creditor of the bank. They owe you the value of the gold, but they use the physical metal for their own liquidity.
Oh, wow. So if the bank goes under, you might be out of luck.
Exactly. For true safe haven protection, you always want allocated custody.
Okay, good to know. But even an allocated bank account has some friction if you need to trade quickly, right?
Yes, it's not instantaneous.
So if you want maximum frictionless liquidity, the data strongly points toward gold ETFs, exchange-traded funds that are listed directly on the Tadawul or through international brokerages.
ETFs are incredibly popular for a reason.
Buying an ETF is like it's like buying a ticket to ride the gold price roller coaster without actually having to carry the heavy cart yourself.
That's a great way to put it.
You own the financial value and the price action of the asset, while massive financial institutions absorb all the physical maintenance and security.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, ETFs solve the core contradiction of modern gold investing.
Which is?
You want the price action of a physical commodity, but you want the execution speed of a digital stock. An ETF allows you to rebalance your portfolio in milliseconds during trading hours.
That's a huge advantage over physical bars.
It is. However, you have to watch the tracking error, which is how perfectly the fund's price mirrors the actual physical spot price of gold. And you really have to watch the expense ratios.
Right, the management fees.
Exactly. Over decades, a high expense ratio on an ETF can compound and erode your returns just as badly as a physical insurance premium.
Right, so you are essentially trading custody risk for counterparty risk in management fees.
Pretty much.
But if you want a solution that bypasses the traditional stock exchange entirely, there is a mechanism taking off right now that is completely changing the landscape, especially for younger investors in the kingdom.
Oh, the intersection of fintech and precious metals.
Yes. Here's where it gets really interesting. Think about the massive paradigm shift here.
It's wild.
You have the ancient tactile experience of the traditional souk weighing physical 24-karat coins on a scale, right?
Right.
Fast forward to today, and you have blockchain-audited fintech applications on a smartphone, allowing you to buy fractional shares of a gold bar with like three taps.
The mechanics of fractional digital gold are brilliant because they truly democratize the asset class.
Absolutely.
Historically, gold had a really high barrier to entry. Buying a 1 ounce bar requires thousands of reals in upfront capital.
Not to mention the markup from the dealer.
Exactly. But these digital platforms utilize secure ledgers to mathematically divide a massive institutional-grade gold bar sitting in a vault in Riyadh or perhaps Zurich into micro units.
So you can buy a fraction of a gram for the cost of a cup of coffee.
Yes, exactly.
And the crucial distinction the research emphasizes is that these aren't just algorithmic derivatives or like papal promises.
No, they are real assets.
In a properly regulated platform, every digital token or fractional unit you purchase is one-to-one backed by physical allocated gold in a secure vault.
That's the key.
You get the millisecond transaction speeds of an ETF. You bypass the personal storage fees of physical bullion, but you maintain legal claim to a tangible, real-world asset.
It is the ultimate evolution of convenience. But, and there's always a but, it introduces a new vector of risk.
Platform transparency.
Exactly.
Right.
The barriers to entry are so low for the user, it is very easy to get lulled into a false sense of security.
Which is why the regulatory framework is so aggressive right now.
Yeah.
You cannot just download any random app claiming to sell digital
Oh,
gold.
but please don't do that.
You must ensure the platform is licensed by the appropriate capital market authorities, and you have to verify their pricing APIs.
Yes, the spreads.
Right, because some predatory platforms will offer no-fee trading, but they aggressively mark up the spot price they feed into your app.
It's a classic trick.
You have to check their live buy and sell spreads against the official Saudi central bank rates or global spot prices before executing a trade. If the spread is suspiciously wide, that is your hidden fee.
And on top of that, you must demand proof of third-party vault audits.
Oh, yeah, that's crucial.
If a fintech company claims your digital token represents a gram of gold, an independent auditor must regularly verify that the physical vault actually contains the equivalent tonnage.
Because without audits, you are just trading digital illusions.
Literally just numbers on a screen.
So, okay, we've broken down the deep cultural floor that stabilizes the price, the macroeconomic mechanics that make it a vital hedge against the oil cycle, and the highly optimized vehicles, from 24K bullion to ETFs and fractional digital tokens to actually acquire it.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We really have. But let's not pretend gold is a magic bullet, right? If you are constructing a resilient portfolio for 2025, you have to look at the glaring blind spots of this asset class.
Yeah, every asset has a mathematical limitation.
For sure.
With gold, the pros are clear. You get extreme liquidity in the local market, freedom from corporate solvency risk, and historical purchasing power protection.
But the limitation is massive. And this feels like the elephant in the room that gold bugs love to ignore.
The lack of yield.
Yes, the data is clear. Gold does not yield. It doesn't pay a quarterly dividend like a blue chip stock, and it doesn't generate monthly rental income like real estate. It just sits in a dark vault.
It does nothing.
So basically, gold is a purely defensive, static play. You are tying up capital, taking it out of the productive economy, and just hoping the global fear index pushes the price up.
Look, that is a mathematically sound critique. Gold is intrinsically non-productive capital.
Right.
The financial literature we are reviewing uses an excellent sports analogy to frame this, actually. You cannot field a team consisting entirely of goalies and expect to win a championship.
Because you'll never score.
Exactly. You will not lose the game quickly, but inflation and opportunity cost will ensure you slowly bleed out over time.
That makes perfect sense.
A modernized portfolio requires an aggressive offense and a solid defense. Your offense consists of yield generating, productive assets equities, venture capital, real estate. Those assets compound your wealth.
And your defense is gold.
Yes. It acts as the shock absorber when the offensive assets take a hit during a recession.
And actually, the research highlights a very specific optimized pairing to solve this exact lack of yield in the Saudi market.
Oh, the real estate integration.
Yeah. It points to the integration of real estate-backed platforms, specifically citing models like Osol Gamma.
Which is a perfect mathematical counterbalance to the gold problem.
It really is. Think about the mechanics. You take the highly liquid, zero-yield, globally recognized stability of gold, and you pair it with the lower liquidity, high yield, domestically driven growth of commercial or residential real estate through a platform like Osol Gamma.
You are basically creating a synthetic optimal portfolio.
Right.
Gold protects your purchasing power when fiat currency devalues, but it doesn't pay you while you wait. Real estate on platforms like Osol Gamma generates continuous passive income through rental yields and appreciates through physical development.
So you get the ultimate inflation hedge from the metal, and you get the compounding cash flows from the property.
Exactly.
One is entirely detached from the local economy, and the other is deeply rooted in local infrastructure growth. You have your goalie and you have your striker.
It is the textbook definition of modern asset allocation.
It's just brilliant.
You are addressing the 2025 macro realities by honoring the need for absolute tangible safety while aggressively solving for gold's inherent lack of yield.
So what does this all mean? We've covered incredible ground today. From the tactile weight of tradition in a local souk to the blockchain-verified vaults of modern fintech.
It's been a journey.
If we distill the data, gold is not a relic. It remains a mathematically vital, non-correlated anchor for any diversified portfolio in the kingdom, specifically because it acts as a shock absorber against the volatility of the global petrochemical cycle.
And, you know, the evolution of how we interact with it is unprecedented.
Truly.
The vehicle you choose fundamentally depends on your personal risk architecture.
Right.
If you prioritize absolute sovereignty and zero counterparty risk, you navigate the VAT regulations and secure physical 24-karat bullion.
Yep.
If you prioritize institutional liquidity and want to trade the asset alongside your equities, you leverage a Tada Wool-listed ETF.
Makes sense.
And if you demand absolute convenience and microscopic barriers to entry, fractional digital ownership verified by audits is your optimized path.
It is genuinely remarkable how an element forged in supernovas billions of years ago has seamlessly adapted to run on smartphone APIs.
Pretty wild to think about.
But I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder as you audit your own asset allocation.
Okay.
We started this deep dive by exploring the profound, emotional, cultural weight of physical gold. The heavy necklaces passed down through generations, the tangible security of a dowry.
The physical connection.
Right. It was wealth you could hold, feel, and gift.
Yeah.
As we optimize our portfolios further into the digital age, where your gold becomes nothing more than a fractional, sterile data point on a screen, backed by an unseen vault thousands of miles away, Does gold eventually lose that visceral cultural magic and prestige that established its value in the kingdom in the first place?
Wow. If the emotional connection disappears, you really have to wonder if the behavioral economics that stabilize the price will eventually change with it.
Exactly. Something to mull over the next time you check your portfolio out. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.